Morning. Welcome to Liminal Church of Ventura. Whether you're here in person or whether you're joining us online, we're glad you're here. As you may know, today is our regular last Sunday of the month contemplative service. Let me take some time to be quiet and to consider a bit more deeply the theme of the day. For the past few weeks, our Advent series has been titled, What Do You Fear? The theme for today is, Let Fear Fuel a Fire for Justice. At the end of our service, we will be sharing communion together. At Liminal, all are welcome to the table, without reservation. So when you're prompted, if you choose, make your way up the inner aisles, and receive a gluten-free cracker or bread and some grape juice from the ushers and continue down the outer aisles. At the conclusion of the service, please place your cups in the bins out in the coffee bar. To start this morning, let's look at the story of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus under threat from Herod and their flight into Egypt in fear for their lives. After the wise men were gone, God's angel showed up again in Joseph's dream and commanded, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt. Stay until further notice. Herod is on the hunt for this child and wants to kill him." Joseph obeyed. He got up, took the child and his mother under cover of darkness. They were out of town and well on their way before daylight. They lived in Egypt until Herod's death. This Egyptian exile fulfilled what Hosea had preached, "I called my son out of Egypt." Herod, when he realized that the scholars had tricked him, flew into a rage. He commanded the murder of every little boy 2 years old or under who lived in Bethlehem and the surrounding hills. That's when Jeremiah's revelation was fulfilled. A sound was heard in Ramah, weeping and much lament. Rachel weeping for her children, Rachel refusing all solace, her children gone, dead and buried. Later, when Herod died, God's angel appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. "Up, take the child and his mother and return to Israel. All those out to murder the child are dead." Imagine for a moment that you are Joseph or Mary. Extraordinary things have happened to you. Mary found out that she was to become pregnant as an unmarried teenager. Joseph is visited by a dream and is challenged to go against the customs of the day and to eventually marry his fiancée, even though she is pregnant and he's not the father. Then, at the time of the baby's birth, they traveled almost 100 miles to Bethlehem, where they were forced to stay in the only place available, a shelter made for animals. There, they were met by shepherds, who no doubt told the couple about their encounter with angels and what the angels had prophesied about the child who Mary held in her arms. Sometime later, they were visited by mysterious men from the east, scholars or astrologers who followed a star to find the newborn Messiah. Joseph had another dream, and this one is possibly the most disturbing of all. This child, the Messiah, was not safe. In fact, Herod the Great had intent on killing him, so much so that he orders the death of any male child who could possibly be the right age. So the Holy Family left in terror, fearing for their safety and for their child's life. Mary and Joseph's valid fears motivated them to move, and they sought refuge in Egypt until it was safe for them to return home. Sadly, this tale seems true to life to many refugees around the world today. Their valid fears motivate them to flee, and many times, instead of a destination they hope and pray will offer them safety, they find doors slammed in their faces and are subjected to abuse, discrimination, and all manner of injustice. Imagine what Mary and Joseph must have felt to be forced by injustice into fleeing for their lives and the life of Jesus. Now, imagine what it must be like for the millions of refugees who are forced to flee from all they have known, leaving behind possessions, means of support, all that is familiar, having been chased out by war, famine, political upheaval, disease, or any number of things that make remaining in their homelands impossible. Just for a moment, allow yourself to imagine you are a refugee, that you have fled everything that you have ever known and are facing a new reality that holds no certainty of safety. What feelings arise in you? Our Advent theme this year was, What Do You Fear? And I imagine the various teachers touched on your own fears somewhere during the series. Fear is a natural and primitive feeling that is experienced by everyone to some degree at one time or another. It's a basic emotional response to a perceived threat or danger that triggers the body's fight or flight response, leading to physiological changes like increased heart rate or adrenaline levels. Fear is an essential survival mechanism, helping individuals react to potentially life-threatening situations. It can respond to immediate tangible threats and more abstract and future concerns. Fear can also be learned through past experiences and observations. But fear can also be paralyzing. Fear and its close cousin, anger, can create havoc in our bodies and with our emotions. In fact, the normal response to fear is fight, flight, or freeze. But what if there's another way to respond to our fears? This Advent season, we've used the poetry of Wendell Berry as inspiration. Let's take a look at this poem called Our Real Work. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And when we no longer know which way to go, we have begun our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. What do these verses stir in your heart? Instead of trying to push our fear and feelings of helplessness away, what if we used those same feelings as fuel or motivation? What if we harnessed that incredible source of energy for good, to fight for a world where no one fears for their safety? Utilizing our fear wisely doesn't only help others. Taking concrete action also interrupts the fear that so easily paralyzes us. This can help others, yes, but the act of putting our fear to work changes us too. Harnessing feelings that well up in us when we consider injustice, hatred, and anger can be the very motivation or the impeded stream that allows us to sing songs of justice and reconciliation, doing what we can to change the world around us. One of the most beautiful sounds in all of creation is the sound of a stream or a river rushing between, over, and around the rocks and boulders along the way. It is the impediments in the stream that allow the song to rise. Barry's poem states it beautifully. The impeded stream is the one that sings. When you consider your fears, can you name them? Perhaps a fear of lack of control, lack of power, lack of resources, or something else. When you feel fear, where does your fear lead you? Can you imagine using your fear to motivate you to stand for justice, personally or on behalf of others? What might that look like? What song rises up in you in response to life's impediments? Thank you. One of the Wendell Berry poems we looked at earlier in the series was The Peace of Wild Things. I'd like to take another look at it. When we consider the state of the world around us, and when we consider how very large the problems are, and how very small we feel, it can be completely overwhelming, can't it? This poem offers a respite from those very understandable feelings. Berry suggests that when you feel overwhelmed by injustice and despairing at unrighteousness, seek the peace of wild things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound in fear of what my life and my children's lives might be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. The Peace of Wild Things speaks of finding peace from human anxiety by immersing ourselves in nature. When overwhelmed by despair and fear for the future, solace can be found by observing wild things like the wood drake and the heron, who live in the present without worry of future grief. This connection to the world, to the natural world's simple existence, can allow us, if only for a moment, to feel an invitation to rest and be restored. For all of humanity's complexity, nature remains a vital source of wisdom and consolation. We are part of this natural order and can find our place within it. As we continue our contemplative service, the question, "What can I do?" may linger within you. This question's not new. In the Old Testament, Micah prophesied during a time of deep social injustice, idolatry, and corrupt leadership, warning of invasion and exile. Recognizing the truth of Micah's words, the people asked what they could do to please God. Micah's response serves as God's answer, contrasting superficial religious acts with the core requirements of his covenant: justice, mercy, and humility. Here are Micah's words. "God has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Micah lays out three requirements that would please God: to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. These words remain a foundational principle for living a life aligned with God's will, challenging modern readers to build just, compassionate, and humble communities. as we pause again, consider how you might personally live your life in response to these requirements. In response to the ways of the world these days, God has shown us what is good. Good for the world, good for one another and for ourselves. In fact, this is how we were designed to be. As we practice justice, mercy, and humility, we become more and more human. More and more our true selves. Our fears can fuel a fire within us, a passion for these things. This coming year, let our challenge be to stop being paralyzed by fear, but rather let it lead us to action for the sake of the world, for the sake of our neighbors, and for the sake of ourselves. This being the last Sunday of the month, in addition to our time of contemplation, we'll also be taking communion. Just a few days ago, we celebrated Christmas when God took on human flesh in the form of the infant Jesus. Through this incarnation, God began the process of redeeming all of creation. The crucifixion and the resurrection were then the culmination of that process. When taking the elements of communion, we are called to remember the sacrifice of body and blood made by Jesus. At Liminal Church, all are welcome to participate in this remembrance. When you're ready, come forward take a piece of bread or a gluten-free cracker and pick up a glass. The ushers will fill the glass with juice, and you can take these elements back to your seat. As you eat and drink, remember the sacrifices made by Jesus in both the incarnation and the crucifixion. Feel free to stay in this room if you'd like to spend some more time in silence. When you are ready to leave, please do so quietly and save your conversations for the coffee bar and the entry area. Thank you for being here today. Go in the presence of God and in the peace of wild things. There will be someone in the back to pray with you if any of you feel the need for that following the service.
Thank you.